And so, of course, Apollo desired her. Apollo, the burning sun god, the most beautiful of all the Olympians. For Apollo, then, desire was a little thing, for this was before he had met Hyacinth and learned about love and loss. Easy come, easy go. And he was a god, and had world enough, and time, and still little patience for such coyness. He was cultured, and handsome, and powerful. And a god, of course, which helps a lot in sexual adventurings. When he came hunting for Daphne in the steep ravines of her homeland, he had had little experience of rejection. In fact, he did not believe it. What, after all, were women for? And they always seemed to enjoy it well enough. And oh, by all the powers of Olympus, Daphne was lovely. She was lucky indeed that he would be the first, and she would not be bungled about by some cack-handed woodsman. Down from the heights of Olympus he came, smiling a little at his own generosity and Daphne's good fortune. It was a bright and cheerful morning as he crossed the moorland and approached her steep-sided wooded valley. It was lovely as he went down, and his pleasure mounted. In the shade of the trees, it was very quiet, very peaceful, and below him the river sang its gurgling song. At the bottom, beside the river, he burst into open laughter, grinned, smoothed back his golden curls, and went hunting downstream. He found her in an ilex grove, those sacred, silvery, evergreen holm oak trees, which filtered the bright light above down into hush and solitude. She was kneeling, very still, watching a red vixen give a first hunting lesson to her three black-nosed cubs. He unslung his golden harp and rippled out a little tune. "Shh," she said crossly, and without looking round, which rather annoyed him. He might have done well to remember that she had been rocked asleep and awoken by music that Orpheus himself had never dared to play. But it was too late. The vixen turned, panicked, summoned her cubs on the swift feet of their fear, and all four disappeared, vanished into the shadows of the grove. Then Daphne turned and saw, not a god, but a noisy and brash young man who had disturbed her friends with his loud and tinny lyre. A more sensitive youth might have realized that this was hardly an auspicious beginning for a morning's dalliance. But if you had been a god, if you had built the walls of Troy and introduced the laws and the musical harmonies to all the peoples of the Mediterranean, if you had held in check the fierce stallions of the sun and forced them to pull the great burning chariot across the whole sky from the cream-colored courts of morning to the deep indigo ocean of the night, you too might well be lacking in sensitivity and modesty. There followed a half hour of chat, in which Apollo was charming and Daphne civil. Then he laid one elegant bronzed hand on her naked shoulder. She took it off again, quite calmly, and said perhaps she should be going. He laughed and put his hand back again. She smiled politely, and quite clearly, so that every tree in the grove should hear her, said, "No, thank you." Even he could not persuade himself that this was maidenly reticence. Even he could not convince himself that this was the practiced shyness of a courtesan, that this "no" meant yes, or at the very worst, maybe. Even he could not believe for one moment that this was moral qualm or prudish withdrawal. This, even in his self-loving ears, was the simple "no" of a woman who was simply not interested. He was both baffled and embarrassed. And then he was angry. He was angry because he was ashamed. His anger was the tantrum of a spoiled child, denied a pleasure that he had thought he had the right to expect. But his power was the power of a god. He said with a crooked smile, "I never take no for an answer." "How inconvenient for you," she remarked coolly. And then she looked up into his face and was terrified. Although she had lived innocent and free, she knew what she was seeing in his eyes, and swift as the fox bitch, the mother vixen, she was on her feet and running. Along the side of the hill, weaving through the ilex trees, grateful to them that they did not encourage underbrush, she ran and heard, without wishing to, the heavy sounds of his pursuit. She thought at first that she might outpace him, that she was on her home ground, that he did not know the contours and curves of the forest. But she heard, too, the dogged anger of his pursuit, that there was no hiding place from which he would not snatch her. There was no safety, no earth in which she could, like the foxes, take refuge. Fear. She could taste the flavor of fear in her mouth, catching at her breath, squeezing it. Fear and outrage. She could hear her own heart beating, dragging at her footsteps, and still behind her among the trees she could hear him coming, hear the obscenities that he was mouthing, hear the weight, the heavy weight of him pressing on her grove that would soon be pressing on her flesh. Fear. Fear did not instruct her, but made her clumsy and stupid. At the end of the grove, where the rough bracken re-established itself and the ilex trees gave way to scrubbier elder and ash, she turned downhill, down towards her father, towards the river at the bottom. The sides of the valley here were steep. She slithered, caught her foot on a root, stumbled, fell, struggled for balance, and still he was behind her. Nearer now, nearer. And he was still coming after her, and there was no escape. Fear, terror. She broke out of the rough wood at the river's very edge. There was a small patch of grass, very green, and over on the other side of the river, the beech trees rose indifferent and silent with their carpet of fallen leaves and masts a deep copper colour in the still morning. The river here formed a deeper pool at the foot of a small waterfall, small but too high for her to climb it, and he was behind her, and there was no hope, no hope, no hope, and she turned now like a deer at bay, and he came crashing down after her, his whole face contorted by the chase, by his excitement, his anger, his own awareness of his power, and her danger. And there was nothing she could do. And as his hands reached for her, she cried out in a loud voice, "Mother!